The playoffs are near, and we have an army. Nation Gear is ready to gear you up for Vancouver's playoff run. Rep your favorite team as they battle for the cup. Shop the exclusive We Have an Army playoff tee and more at nationgear.ca.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Can you see it? Did you know this?
Check, but the puck comes right to Pettersson, who tries a bank pass for Besser. In with a shot, he scores!
A moment's notice. Adams Lee.
You're listening to Canucks Conversation.
Quinn Hughes, beat reporter here. Like, I don't cover the Canucks. Yeah. I cover Quinn Hughes and what he's doing to the Canucks.
A member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Just wave the guy and get Demko involved. I wanted him in and down.
Wow. We should do a radio show together. Right on. I want to fist bump you right now.
What our house. Pearl steals, cutting in, shoots, scores!
Don't waste all the good stuff on the off-air, let's go.
Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Canucks Conversation, brought to you by the great folks at Zephyr Epic. You can use promo code HOCKEYSEASON, capital H, capital S, all one word. That will get you $5 off your first order on ZephyrEpic.com. Z-E-P-H-Y-R, Epic on all platforms. They ship free Canada-wide on any order over $50. We're also delivered to you by DoorDash. Use promo code CONVODD, capital C, capital D's, all one word, CONVODD. That will get you 25% off and free delivery on your first order with the DoorDash app. My name is David Quadrelli. I'm not joined by Chris Faber. I'm actually joined by Patrick Johnson of the province. We'll get to that in a second, PJ. But I just wanted to start by telling the listeners the absence of Faber. Not here today. For those that you haven't seen on Twitter already, Faber's stepmom, Nikki Faber, passed away this past week. Faber went home to Nanaimo to be with his family. Our thoughts are with Chris, the entire Faber family. Chris, we love you, buddy. It feels weird to do the show without you, but it was Faber's wishes, and he's very excited. Not excited that Kevin Woodley's going to join us on this episode. I can tell you that much, PJ. But Patrick Johnson, how you doing, man?
Why are you yelling, Quads?
I don't yell. I talk loud. You should hear Faber. Like, you should. I know I just said, like, we love you, Faber.
It's
now I'm slagging Faber immediately.
Well, no, I was slagging you.
Well, yeah, no, but I'm slagging Faber because he's even louder than I am.
It's Canucks conversation.
Harmon's louder. No, you
I talk to Harmon all the time.
Yeah, Harmon.
Harmon has a very measured, lovely voice.
He does, but he is loud on the podcast.
You're very passionate, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm very passionate. Italian. This is too quiet. Look at our levels.
You're Italian.
This is way too. Exactly. Exactly.
Hey, you brought me here. Don't tell me how to talk. I'll walk out.
All right. Fair enough.
Yes. No. Best of favor and best to his family.
Yeah. Of course.
Sort of unthinkable moment for him. So.
Yeah. We're thoughts are with him and his family for sure during this time. Okay. PJ. Spencer Martin, that's the big news of the day. This is an episode. Usually we post on Saturdays. Obviously, like I just said, we didn't do the Wednesday episode because personal stuff going on.
Yes.
But we are getting this out on Friday. Spencer Martin signs right before we're supposed to come to the studio. I even texted you, said I'm going to be late picking you up because I got to get this
article. You were on time.
I was because I write so fast.
We're in fact recording earlier than I expected.
Yeah, we are actually.
Thank you.
We're going to have a little time.
Yeah, big news. I mean, what? The 3% chance at the playoffs isn't the big news. The fact they've won two games in a row and now they can still run the table and maybe still make the playoffs. Although, as I joked last night, pick your two teams. I don't think people have actually looked at Edmonton's schedule. But anyway, that's a different question.
I'm looking.
Spencer Martin. Big deal. No, I mean, I think as everyone else has picked up, I've had a lot of people in my mentions saying this is good. You know, this is a guy that's worked hard. And it's absolutely. I mean, you had a lovely piece about Curtis Sanford and Spencer Martin. Well done.
Thank you.
It was like, it was prescient. It was like, you knew. Did you know?
No, I swear I didn't know. I
just a smart guy.
Gave the take that they should sign him.
Yes.
Like,
yeah, for sure.
I have been saying this for the past couple weeks that and we'll get to it. Like Kevin Woodley's going to join us and we'll talk about it more with him. And I think he shares this sentiment with me, but the way I kind of looked at this, and for those that don't know yet, Spencer Martin, 2-year contract, one-way deal, cap hit is $762,000. There's a little 500 in there.
Did you just do that math in your head?
No, I did it at home and it took me a lot more time.
well done, because I definitely didn't have that in my head.
Thanks. Yeah, so cap hit 762, which obviously makes it a completely variable contract, right? Like, worst case Ontario, Spencer Martin shows up to camp, is nothing like what he looked like this year, and he has to go down to the minors. It's a completely variable contract, really has no implications for the Canucks. What it does have implications for is Spencer Martin himself. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when it's a one-way contract, paid the same salary in the NHL or the AHL, guaranteed salary, that's big for Spencer Martin, because if you look at his career earnings, again, like, champagne problems, but it's not that much. Like, he's getting AHL salary, which is maximum, I think, $100,000 for him in his career. So you're very happy for a guy like Spencer Martin, because, you know, you never know when you're even going to get a shot at the NHL. And when he did get his unlikely shot earlier in the year, Patrick, he really made good on it. And you never know when you're going to get those shots. And, you know, he, let's not forget, goes down with COVID right after, right? Like, was supposed to make a bunch of starts in a row, missed the next start after his first game where he was supposed to start against St. Louis, missed that start because he was on COVID protocol. You feel for a guy like that. You don't know when he's going to get another shot. You didn't know if he was ever going to get that coveted one-way contract, because I know it doesn't seem like a big deal to the casual fans or just the observers of the team, but like, this is a huge deal for Spencer Martin, and, you know, happy for him to be able to get that contract. Do you think the Canucks have made the right decision signing this contract to this goaltender?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the other thing is, if you look at it, he's actually, in exchange for getting 2 years, he's taking a discount on when he was making $800K this year. So, you know, it's one of those ones where it's every little bit counts. This is a guy that showed, certainly in the toughest of circumstances, showed that, you know, the talent's there. He was a guy in junior who was, you know, one of the sort of, there was a lot of hype with him when he was in junior. Things kind of fell off. And then, you know, he's kind of battled his way through pro hockey, had those three starts in Colorado. But there was nothing to say that this guy was on track. And he listened to the coaches. I mean, I remember we talked with Martin when he was, you know, in the middle of his run with the Canucks in January. And, you know, a guy who gave basically full credit to his coaches and, you know, it basically said, listen, I was willing to listen and just be broken down. And, you know, we know that the Ian Clark school is aggressive. It's challenging. It demands a lot of goalies, and not everybody's made out for it. And, but he clearly was, because he recognized that, you know, going to work with Curtis Sanford, who is part of the Clark club, you know, maybe a different sort of personal sort of approach, but in the end, very much in that sort of you are going to have to be challenging yourself mentally. I mean, you and I both talked to Ian Clark, you know, that he's very clear about it. He says, I know what I'm about. I know what I do. And I know what I expect of guys. And it's because I think they can be great, but it's going to be hard, and it's going to be probably harder than a lot of guys expect. And if you're a guy like Spencer Martin, you're coming into a totally new environment. I mean, he had been with Colorado, he'd been with Tampa, but not a guy that had really any previous experience with Ian Clark, or, you know, in the end with Curt Sanford. And basically said, no, this is going to, I'm in your hands, make it happen. And in the end, a guy that showed character through that and has made himself, into an NHL, at least NHL backup caliber goaltender.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's not forget, Spencer Martin started the year as the third string goalie in Abbotsford this year, right? Like, that's not an easy position to be put into. I did chat with Curtis Sanford a little bit about that. It didn't make it into the story that I wrote, but I will be writing another one because I got a lot of good stuff from Curtis Sanford. And one of the things he said was just like, you know, he remembers being in that position where you don't feel like you belong, and almost like, and Curtis didn't say this, but it's almost like, why am I here? Like, what's the goal here? Like, there's two young guys in front of me, and the organization obviously wants to play them, but the Canucks kind of saw something in Martin. Like, it wasn't like this was just a trade that just happened, right? Like, this was Curtis Sanford at multiple points going to Ryan Johnson and saying, hey, I saw this guy in Syracuse, Tampa Bay's farm team. I saw this guy in Syracuse when he was playing against us in Utica. And he's really good. He has a lot of potential, and I see a lot in his game. And that was Curtis Sanford that identified Spencer Martin as a target. And they went out and got him, and he's been every bit as advertised. Like, they knew there was potential in his game. They saw little things in his game that they could kind of tweak. And, you know, full credit to Spencer Martin for actually doing it, because like you said, not everybody jives super well with Ian Clark. You don't have to look far to see Jaroslav Halak, for example. Even Braden Holtby didn't really work under Ian Clark super well, and under the Canucks system, or lack of, we should say. But
well, I mean, that's not on Clark, but that's the
overall
picture. But yeah, the overall picture was, yeah, coming in was not good. And Martin, I mean, the signing of Martin was in many ways a reaction to, again, lessons I guess they learned last year when they basically were told they couldn't have a proper third number three guy.
Yeah.
And Mike DiPietro was going to be the number three guy. It was terrible for his development, but essentially fulfilled the requirements that the NHL had put on teams to navigate through last season, because things were going to be so challenging because of COVID. And they come into this year basically being, okay, we need to make sure that we have everything covered off. And they did. And it was an interesting one, because especially once they kind of said, well, I mean, they technically were going to have an affiliation with Kalamazoo, even though they basically walked away from it. They haven't actually acted on it. I mean, Seelofs has ended up in Trois-Rivières, right? Right. In Quebec. So he didn't even go down there. And part of their deal was because they weren't sure about the border, and that's fine. But they basically said it was a moment of over-preparing, which hasn't always been the case. It hadn't certainly always been the case under the previous regime. And for once they did it, it did create a difficult, obviously, situation when you do have two goalie prospects sitting there. And I'm sure we'll talk more with Kevin about that, sort of where this goes now. It was a different moment. And for sure, like you said, like this is also a huge credit just on his own to Curtis Sanford, because he's still a relatively young goalie coach, right? Like, he's been helping out with the Canucks AHL team for a number of seasons. This is his first season as a full-timer though, right? I mean, he was essentially, he was kind of working as a full-timer, but he wasn't always there, but he worked a lot with DiPietro. He knew DiPietro well, but basically for him to put his hand up and say, no, this is a guy that I think we should be interested in. There's something to work. There's something that our system, the way we're going to approach this, the way that Ian and I want to do things, huge credit to him for seeing that and getting it. I mean, you're not going to get everyone right. I mean, that was part of the takeaway from Patrick Alvin, was, basically saying, listen, scouts need to understand that they're most of the time going to be wrong, and most of the guys that you like aren't going to make it. So Sanford's going to see another guy, and it's not going to work out. But, pretty good way to start off your sort of scouting and recruitment career as a goalie coach.
Yeah, absolutely. And you brought up Mikey DiPietro there and how it was a bit of a lost season for him last year, and that was because they didn't go get a third-string goaltender. What do you think this signing means for Mikey DiPietro, like, as a whole? Because to me, like, and we had this conversation on the car ride over.
Yeah.
Like, to me, It's a great situation for Mike because now he's the starter in Abbotsford, and there's nobody there to really compete with him other than Archer Seelov, who I think they're going to split starts.
Yeah, we'll see how things play out. You know, you still find yourself wondering. You know, they are going to want to have a fifth guy. You know, I mean, maybe they'll. You know, you find some ECHL fodder. I mean, they've done this before. There's a in Utica. There was a long list of guys who was essentially they had a number five guy who mostly played in the ECHL and would pinch it at the AHL level when there was an injury there or there was a call up to the NHL, that kind of thing. So, you know, there is going to be a guy like that. Well, it'll be interesting to see who that, I mean, essentially that's who Martin was supposed to be,
yeah.
Right? I mean, he was not destined to be this player that, you know, in the end they hit a home run with him. There's still obviously the door's not closed on Mike DiPietro. There's no doubt about that. I mean, there was a reason why they drafted him in the first place. There's a lot of talent there. I just find myself looking at the overall picture. It's not so much a story about Mike DiPietro directly. It's a story about what's the next succession plan, right? You know, you got Demko, you got Martin under, you know, lockdown now as your guys in the NHL. But Martin is, you know, in the end, the life of the backup is constantly looking over your shoulder. And now it's on Seelovs or DiPietro to force that conversation next season. And so next year's going to be a big one for DiPietro. I mean, I'm sure they'd love to get him under something that brings down his cap hit a little bit. You know, not that it's a big deal cause he's in the minors and so it doesn't affect them in the long view, but you know, he is due he's making 800K this year. He's due a small raise on a qualifying offer. And, you know, it is one of those ones. I mean, in the end, it's mostly peanuts at that point, but, you know, they're going to commit to this guy and see what he can do. But in the end, like there is this sort of Archer Seelov's question who, you know, DiPietro barely played last year. Didn't even get games in the first half. Seelov's at least got games in the first half and then eventually found some games late in the season. I mean, it was going to be a tough season no matter where you were. There's no doubt about it, but it was far from, even in challenging circumstances, far from optimal for both those prospects. And then the situation this year, I mean, DiPietro's played a lot more. Seelov's is finally getting some games, but you know, to sit around and not play, and this is something we talked with DiPietro last year. I mean, he was honest about it. He said, DiPietro loves practice. We know that. He loves working on his game, but you got to actually play the games, actually execute and understand what you're doing. And, you know, that would be the good thing for him this year is that he's actually played, but you know, it is, we're sort of entering into sort of prove it or lose it territory, you know, that he's going to be a guy that if things don't come, you know, come around for him, if he doesn't become the guy that his certainly younger talents showed that he could be, he is going to be moving on to, you know, the world where Spencer Martin was and sort of fighting his way through the minors, fighting his way through the AHL and maybe just never being a guy again, but hoping he can be and having, you know, maybe finding someone who's going to mesh. I don't get any sense he doesn't mesh with the guys here. It's just,
totally.
You know, it's just, that's the reality. That's where you're at, yep. Right? I mean, that is just how it goes. The moment you're drafted in many ways, I think that's the thing that young guys, especially if you're outside the first round, guys realize this quickly. You're all almost immediately looking over your shoulder because teams are constantly looking, who's the next guy? Who's the next guy? Who's the next guy?
Yeah.
Who, you know, is there a younger guy who's better? Because a younger guy who's better gives you more upside, right? And that's the continual thing. And so that's kind of that literally where DiPietro is at right now.
Okay. We'll get to the poll question and then we'll call Kevin Woodley because I texted him and asked if he's ready to go early. And he is. Because I don't want to start talking playoffs till after the Woodley conversation. So let's get to the poll question. Our episode 252 poll question brought to you by Atlas Goods, the creators of Pop Rinds. Use promo code CC15 for 15% off your first order at atlasgds.com and get your hands on the best fresh pork rinds straight out of your air fryer or microwave. They're fantastic. We've heard Faber and I talk about them quite a bit. Folks, so use promo code CC15 at atlasgds.com, locally owned company, so go check them out. Our poll question today, are you happy with Spencer Martin being the backup next season? Patrick, overwhelming response here. 80% of voters say yes, 4% say no, 16% say I'm angry. I don't know if you caught this. We put I'm angry as a poll option every time because we did it once and people like never take this away, so we left it. 16% of people saying I'm angry. I think both of us are on the yes side, part of that 80%. All right, we'll call Kevin Woodley, chat with him about Spencer Martin and the whole goaltending situation as a whole after this short word from Parallel 49 Brewing Company. Hey, you get to hear Faber's voice on this episode, folks.
And before we go any further into the episode, want to give a shout out to Parallel 49 Brewing. You guys can find Parallel 49 beer all across BC and Alberta. And right now we want to give a quick shout out to the Unparalleled Pack featuring four of the P49 favorites, the Trash Panda, the Filthy Dirty, the Jerkface 9000, and the Hillbilly Ninja. My favorite of the four there, the Jerkface 9000, the pink can. Something good about those cans there, Parallel 49. So go out and try them. You can find them in most liquor stores across BC and Alberta.
Very pleased to be joined now by Kevin Woodley of In Goal Mag. Kevin, we already had you scheduled before Spencer Martin even signed this contract. So good timing by us. How are you today?
I'm good. That means you guys must be listening to Donnie and Dolly, because I think Dolly had this like pretty much yesterday, no? So like, it's just good pre-scouting, thanks to our friend Rick Dollywall.
Absolutely. Rick Dollywall always helps us out with this show. So Kevin, we'll start there. PJ and I have kind of broken it down a little bit, but your overall thoughts on the Spencer Martin contract that got announced today by the Vancouver Canucks?
I mean, makes perfect sense, no? Right? Like, the veteran experience backup hasn't really gone the way you like it for the last couple of years, although I would argue that Lack's actually probably been better than a lot of people seem to give him credit for here, especially in trying circumstances, playing less than he'd played the last decade plus. And that's a bigger adjustment than I think most people know. But at the end of the day, you've still got him on the books for next year. You still got Braden Holtby's buyout on the books for next year. You needed a cheap option. And, you know, given some of the development we've seen in Spencer Martin's game, given the willingness to work, and you know the time that he's going to get to continue to work with Ian Clark in that backup role, like, it just makes sense, right? Like, this is, and it makes sense that it's a guy you know that's bought into some of the changes that Ian and Curtis Sanford, you know, sort of unilaterally make or look to make in goalies at both levels. You could have gone out and found somebody in a similar mold. I think of a guy like Charlie Lindgren, who, you know, kind of similar to Spencer Martin, right? Like, been in the minors for a while, had some cups of coffee. But took a major stride this year. Like, his five NHL games are 5-0 with a .958. Like, similar numbers. But then you've got the risk of, hey, does he fit in? Does he mesh? Is he willing to buy into the changes they might want here? You don't have any of those questions with Spencer Martin. So just makes sense on a lot of levels. And I think the fact they were able to get a second year out of him, like, if he continues to sort of develop and take the strides we saw this year, that second year could be a real bargain at a time when other teams are, we saw last summer, like guys like Laurent Brossoit, like some of the tickets that were commanded by sort of 1B options, to have this guy potentially fill that role at that ticket at what, $775 next year, is like, that could just be sound money for a team that's going to have salary cap problems elsewhere.
For Mikey DiPietro, he's kind of the guy that we've talked about. What does this signing mean for him?
I think it's more about Spencer Martin and his ability to sort of what he's done this year and climb the depth chart. And yeah, so you look at it like, did he move past Michael DiPietro on the depth charts this year? Yes, he did. Does that mean that Michael DiPietro is stuck behind him at the start of next season? Arguably no. Certainly much more of an opportunity for Mikey to maybe move up that depth chart, even as early as training camp or preseason, than he had this year, right? Like, he came in this year and we all knew there was no chance he was going to be with the big club no matter what, because Yaroslav Halak's contract dictated it. So, you know, this is, yeah, it's a one-way ticket, but we've seen guys with much more pedigree go through waivers unclaimed over the years. So I don't think it's an absolute lock that he's here the way it was that Yaroslav Halak would be here to start this season and all season. So I think if you're Mikey, it's just, hey, took a little step back early, game's coming around late, another opportunity and a real opportunity next year to come in and fight for more opportunities, whether to start or in season, than you had this season, where really didn't matter what he did, he wasn't going to be with the big club.
Martin's success is a pretty big statement about Curtis Sanford's ability, both as a talent evaluator and as a coach, isn't it?
I'm not sure where the talent evaluation side is. I wasn't sure where the origins of that deal with Tampa Bay was in terms of who was making that call, who was identifying him as, you know, a target to add to their depth. I mean, the reality is Spencer Martin came into this season as the fifth guy in the organization. Like, he was, well, at least I think in the eyes of a guy like Ian Clark, he was fifth on this depth chart. If they had an East Coast Hockey League option, he may have been down there. Well, Archer Stilovs and Michael DiPietro started the season here. But to me, it's more about the way they work hand in hand and teach the same thing, and Curtis's ability to sort of execute as a teacher, and Spencer's ability and willingness to sort of buy into the changes they wanted. And, you know, it's a great example of what can happen when you've got pretty much a whole goaltending staff, in this case, just two guys, but full time in Curtis Sanford, which wasn't the case in Vancouver in years past. He was part-time. They make that commitment to him, and it just goes to show you what happens when everybody's sort of on the same page in terms of what you're teaching and what you're preaching to your goaltender top to bottom.
What went wrong for Jaroslav Halak this year?
I got to be careful how I answer that, because it's kind of a loaded question, because I don't know that everything, I don't know that it's the disaster it's made out to be. Like, we're talking about two starts in a 15 game season, right? Like, that's pretty much it. Like, he was submarined by two starts. His numbers were submarined by two starts. I thought his performance up to that point, in, like I said, difficult circumstances, because he is not used to playing every 2 weeks. Like, that is less than he's played in more than a decade. And coincidentally, like, a decade ago was also the last time he played this little, and the last time his save percentage was under 900. I know it's not what he envisioned coming in. And I thought for the most part, outside of those two starts, he handled it really well. You know, I do wonder in those two starts if there were some distractions in terms of maybe expecting to have been traded by that point, maybe at some level hoping to have been traded at that point, and then you get in those two games and he's trying to find his game after a whole bunch of time off, especially after COVID. Team starts terribly, and we saw it, right? Like, we saw it even when he was playing well. Like, he sort of needed to feel his way into games and get himself going. It wasn't clean. It wasn't pretty with the drop of the puck after a couple of weeks off. And so you combine him sort of needing to feel his way into games with a team that, you know, frankly didn't show up in the first period of some of those games, and it got ugly. Like, there's no question it got ugly. But again, outside of those two starts, you know, the numbers are comparable to Thatcher Demko, both raw and adjusted. So I don't know that anything went wrong for Jaroslav Halak beyond the fact he didn't get used the way he thought he'd be used this season.
When you look at next season in terms of usage, then what do you expect? You know, assuming Martin is the backup, what would we expect? Would it be a similar deployment pattern to what we've seen this year?
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. I think obviously it depends how he plays and where they're at. Like, if they're fighting tooth and nail for a playoff spot all year long, you're going to see Thatcher Demko out there a whole bunch. The risk is playing every 2 weeks. Like I said, like, Jaroslav Halak, it was tough for him, and he'd been a sort of 1B for a long time, just a 1B who's used to playing more. It's a big ask for a guy who's still getting his feet wet in the National Hockey League to sit and just practice for weeks at a time. And, you know, the one benefit that Spencer had when he came up here is he'd been playing in the American Hockey League and playing well. So all that game feel and game rhythm was still sort of, maybe not fresh, but somewhat fresh when he finally got into the net. And that certainly helps. So that'll be the challenge for the goalie coaching staff, for Ian Clark, to make sure they find a way to have that balance between, you know, keeping him game ready without maybe being able to get him in as many games as you would like for a goaltender of sort of his age and experience level. It all depends on how he plays, right? Like, at the end of the day, if Michael DiPietro comes back and starts next season the way he finishes or appears to be finishing this one, and there's any bit of a speed wobble with Martin, you have the beauty of Abbotsford, where I am right now, as you can hear the background. Like, you can airlift him in and out. Like, if Martin sits for 2 weeks and you're not sure about his form, and Michael's going and going well in the American Hockey League, and you've got one game you need your backup to play on a weekend, we've seen other teams do it where they use the American Hockey League to keep guys in game rhythm and then, you know, sort of call them up for spot starts. And then a prospect like DiPietro, I still think that's an option, But again, only if Spencer Martin falters to the point where you worry about his a performance after a couple of weeks off.
Speaking of spot starts, there are a couple back-to-backs coming up here. Any chance you think Martin is called up for one of those?
This is fascinating to me because the new management group has made no bones about it in terms of the importance of salary cap space for them next year. We saw Yaroslav's performance in Arizona last night. 27 of 28 was enough to take him from an 894 to an 899. You are one or two similar starts away from him getting back above that 905 save percentage level and another $250,000 bonus on his contract that automatically gets added to their cap hit next season. And so as much as you hate to think that, you know, like it's kind of a, I don't say dirty because it's a business, right? Like he kind of feels a little dirty to rob a guy of that opportunity, especially a guy like Halak, who, like, I know what 300 wins means to him. He's at, I think, 285 now. And, you know, if he gets a couple more this season, it makes it that much more possible for him to maybe get to that magical goalie milestone next year. Do you, for the sake of that cap hit, call up Martin? Because you could argue, right, hey, we got to get this guy in more games, get him accustomed, you know, for next year. Like, there's value there for the team and the added value of not risking adding to your cap in next season. I don't know what the answer is. I suspect they'll just let Yaroslav play out the string because of the optics of doing it the other way. But, man, like, from a business standpoint and from a cap management sort of risk standpoint, especially if they're out of it by the time we get to that second end of the back-to-back, they might have a fascinating decision to make, and I think one that a lot of us will be watching quite closely.
When you look at the past two seasons, Kevin, and I know we've already discussed kind of how, as a whole, the Spencer Martin deal is great because the cap implications and all that sort of stuff compared to the alternatives. When you look at Braden Holtby and Yaroslav Halak, do you think there's any credence to the argument that that Ian Clark just doesn't work super well with older goalies?
No, I don't know if it's that, to be honest with you. Like, I think, you know, when you talk to Braden about the way last year went, like, I think the unique circumstances of the season with no preseason, like, he bought into some of the changes. And I think if you see, he's got, I think, a 9-12 before he got hurt in Dallas this year. Like, a large part of sort of his bounce back this season, when I talked to him, you know, credit to integrating and finally getting comfortable with the changes he made under Clark. The problem, of course, was it just took too long, in part because of the unique nature of the pandemic shortened season last year. And Yaroslav Halak, like, I think, you know, if Ian had sort of come into this season and tried to change him or make the changes that they made with Braden, yeah, you would have had a problem. I don't think they would have worked for Yaro. But he didn't. Like, he recognized that this is a guy with a career 916 save percentage, been one of the best 1Bs in the league for, you know, close to a decade, that it was just a matter of sort of getting him comfortable with his game as opposed to trying to make wholesale changes to it. So, again, I don't know that I would classify it that way, especially, you know, because I don't see Yaroslav's season as being the unmitigated disaster that others seem to, you know, be implying, you know, when I get some of these questions. So, you know, to me, again, that was more about usage and some struggles there, as opposed to, you know, a goalie coach not working with a veteran guy. But, I mean, certainly the amount he demands out of his goaltenders in that backup role, the work ethic he demands from all his goaltenders, might be better suited to a guy who's, you know, young and eager and looking to, you know, embrace all new ideas and all new concepts and just go out and really grind at it, than an older goalie. And I think, you know, above all, like, to be honest, like, some of these older goalies signed here, they were signed here because of uncertainty about Demko, you know, Holtby because they weren't sure about Thatcher's ability to sort of step right into the role. And Yaro, because they needed, you know, injury insurance. Like, what happens if Holtby misses 4 to 6 with a minor MCL tweak? Like, they were so all in for this season. They felt they needed that experience. And, you know, a guy like Yaro, who, it's one thing to play every 2 weeks, but not everybody can do that and then give you 2 good weeks. And that's what Yaro's always been able to do and something they felt they needed. So, You know, again, I don't think this is about the goalie coach and the age of the goalies and the experience of the goalies. I think it's more about the situation.
Kevin, just before we wrap up, Bruce Boudreau, back as head coach next year?
Couldn't tell you. Not sure Bruce could tell you. I think that one of the most fascinating parts of the discussion around this, and I was guilty of it myself, like when we were asked about this a week or so ago, like, you know, why haven't they re-upped him? And you look at the results and you're like, yeah, like it's a fair question. Like, but since the reporting from Elliot Friedman about the fact that Boudreau has an option on his own end, like that kind of tells us that like maybe it doesn't matter whether they want to or not. They can't. Like they can't just unilaterally decide, hey, we got an option on this contract. We're exercising it because he's got an option out. And so talking to some people who are a little closer to him and the situation, it certainly sounds like, you know, there are some teams that might be looking for a head coach this summer, especially depending on what could happen in the playoffs, where, you know, that option, I'm not saying like that he doesn't want to come back here, but, you know, it might be worth waiting to see if that option needs to be exercised on his end. So, like, even if they were to say, and they haven't, but if they were to say, hey, we want him back, I'm not sure. I'm not sure anyone of us knows for sure, but it certainly sounds like, and from what I'm hearing, like, that might not be entirely their decision to make. If it is, this option that Bruce has is something he wants to wait on and see, especially if his alternative is to look elsewhere and maybe get term versus allow them to exercise an option that's just 1 year. I mean, this is, in some ways, the contract's perfect because it gave them flexibility and didn't lock them into another coach that they would have to pay for a long time. But I guess this is the risk of the other side, is things have gone well. And, you know, it might not end up being your choice as to whether he comes back.
Kevin, as always, really appreciate it. I know Faber doesn't like when we have you on the show, but it was good to chat with you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate the vote of confidence from the goalie union portion of the podcast. We'll deal with that Faber guy some other time.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Kevin. And a massive thank you, as always, to Kevin Woodley for joining us. Patrick, there was a question I asked him at the end there that I want to pose to you, and it was just a flat out, Bruce Boudreau, in your opinion, is he back as head coach next year?
Well, I mean, I got asked this. Can I pump up my other places I show up at?
Of course.
I said this on Sakaris and Price.
Yeah, you can pump them.
I was ordered to basically, you know, up, down, yes, no. Make your vote. And I said no. I think because I'm a bit like Kevin, you know, Kevin pointed out to me earlier as well, similar to what he just said there, but he had pointed out to me that, you know, is that, you know, once we sort of think about that option and why that might be being discussed, that Boudreau apparently himself may have an option. You know, you start thinking for him, I mean, he said last week, I mean, basically said, it sure sounded like if he were offered a contract, he would sign it. At least he said that for public consumption. I have no reason to think he wouldn't think otherwise, right?
Boudreau, you know, doesn't seem like the poker player.
You still have to be, right? Like, sure. That's the thing, right? He's been in this game long enough. And he also has been on the outside for almost 2 years, right? Like, he was on the outside for a full season. And he hadn't been on the outside for a full season ever, basically. And, you know, he's 66. He's a guy that's going to be very aware. You know, it's a bit like Rutherford, I think. I think Rutherford, you know, he's 73 and wasn't working. And, you know, people of that age, if they still feel like working, they're very conscious of this being the last role, the last thing they want to do, right? So for Rutherford, there's a chance to leave a legacy to kind of, I think realistically, there was a thing, build a new look front office, build a new look, you know, hire some women, get some women in hockey, break that barrier. And that clearly has been part of his motivation. We'll see how long he actually, you know, he's got this 3-year deal. We'll see how long he sticks around. Boudreau as a coach is in a bit of a different spot because he is beholden to others, right? And he, you know, essentially gets offered this opportunity to go try to, first of all, use his magic again, turn a team around. You know, as I've pointed out in various places, he hasn't had a losing season in 20 years, right? Even when he was let go in Washington, in Anaheim, in Minnesota, his team still had winning records. It was just, there was a sort of a question of, is this the guy to take us to the next level? And that has always been the challenge for him, is that he has always struggled in the playoffs in the end. And, you know, when you look at how good, especially that team in Washington was, and how, you know, it maybe running a little bit on fumes, but realistically still a very good, I mean, he got to what the, you know, he got to conference finals, right? Like with Anaheim. So, you know, very good teams there, but couldn't quite get the last thing done. And some of that's about luck, right? Like you get to down to the last four teams in the NHL and you do need some luck. Like look at, I mean, I know we hit talk about it, but look at 2011, right? Like, was that luck or was that an intervention on Boston's part in that final game against Tampa in the Eastern Conference final? Cause I think everyone's, I mean, we all thought that Tampa was going to beat them and then there were no power plays and you're like, wait, what? But, you know, you do need circumstance. So that's some of it. That said, I find myself thinking a lot about that long-term vision. What do they want in 2 or 3 years? Thinking a lot about that. And then also thinking about how you want to run your team. And I don't know. This is a question I have. I don't know what the answer is. But the question I have is, you know, you look at, in general, where sports have gone. And that is your coach is no longer sort of a separate agent in how your team gets run. They are part of the management group. And that the way the team wants to be run, the way that you're going to play, as management says, is what the coach does. There's no notion of separation that the coach is handed a roster and it's left to him to sort of manage his way through that. And certainly that clearly happened under Jim Benning. That was how Jim Benning ran things. He's like, here's your lineup. Now it's on the coach and it's on the coach to make it work. Or, you know, and if it doesn't, well, we saw what happened to Willie, and in the end, we saw what happened to Travis. And so I find myself wondering, moving forward, because, you know, in the end, I don't think you can have a fair expectation on Boudreau in these circumstances, because he was literally hired by the owner ahead of the management being hired. So it was kind of like, you're being brought into, the owner thought they were still a playoff team. Can you make us a playoff team? And that's Boudreau says, yes, I'm going to do that. So now you're sitting here going, okay, we get to the end of the season, Bruce, this is how we want to do things. This is, I'm just imagining, right? Like, I'm not saying I have knowledge of this, right? But I'm just imagining. I mean, Bruce, this is how we're going to do things. Is this something you are willing to do? Or is this something how you see things? And I have no reason to think he wouldn't say yes, but I don't know he would say yes. So I think that's something that I find myself wondering about too. You know, there was this famous conversation that Gillis and Gilman had with Alain Vigneault when they came in, basically saying, this is what we want. This is what we believe the team needs to be. This is how we believe the team needs to be organized. And, you know, the roster that we are going to set up, we want it to play like this. Are you willing to do that? You know, are you going to be part of that, us as a unit? And that, well, we saw the result. Vigneault said, yes, absolutely. And went against his traditional instincts, which was to build a very defensively oriented lineup and approach, and in the end took on and said they were a collective. And so I find myself wondering, is that part of the discussion that they're now having? Because in the end, management itself has been very focused on this, at least outward presentation, that we are collaborative, you know, that we all have obviously different roles and responsibilities, and that in the end, you know, the Cammy Granato in the end is in charge of scouting. You know, Derek Clancy is like the executive officer. He's in charge of kind of, you know, special projects, making sure everything gets managed properly. Patrick Levine is the GM and is the one who is essentially the chairman. You know, like there are a group of people. He's the CEO, you know, like that he needs to make all these things happen. And he's the one who's sort of providing the final guidance. And then you have that sort of, the monarch in Jim Rutherford, right? Who has an expectation, who sets the expectations, is there to consult, has long years of experience, but isn't necessarily, you know, a day-to-day guy, which, you know, again, funnily enough, we there was that Mike Gillis presentation, that deck that got leaked, basically saying, here's how it's set up. I mean, it's exactly that. And which it wasn't like that was a revolutionary, you know, way to organize yourself. That's a very modern way to organize yourself. It might have been perhaps revolutionary for hockey, because hockey is very slow to sort of move in these kinds of directions in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's, let's be honest, that's how the Leafs run their front office.
Yeah, and for listeners that don't know, you're talking about the leaked document from the when he was trying to go to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I think it was Pittsburgh.
So funny enough.
But I mean, we know that it was a presentation he's made in other places because he's been talking to other places. Yeah. But you know that sort of cohesive approach where you know you have a bunch of people involved versus the old school approach. I mean, the most extreme version was, as I've written about before, was Dale Tallon, who just didn't trust anybody and had everything run through his office. And I think first of all that's foolish to think that you have all the answers. And second of all, there's just too much to do in the modern game. You look at all the things that Ryan Johnson was having to do, and then when we heard he's now the capologist. Well, you're like, but he's already doing all these things. You knew that, like, in the end, you know, it's clear that the fact they have all these people involved, the Sedins are involved, you know, they've got all these voices, Stan Smeal's involved. There's a reason why, because there's just a lot to do. It's not just that these people deserve to be heard from. It's just, there's a lot to do. And, you know, the way the front office was set up before was one of the smaller front offices in the league, and there's just too much to do. So, you know, to come back to the question, is that the coach, if you have to make me pick, I say no, but that's more just me saying it's because there's so much uncertainty right now. But I won't be surprised if Boudreaux is back. That said,
I think I honestly just share the same mindset as you there, that if I had to vote, it's no, but again, not going to be surprised at all. You had a conversation with Patrick Alvin that kind of blew up terrestrial radio, did it not?
Well, everybody was talking about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I got word there was a memo that was sent.
No memo.
Yeah, texted you. You're like, there's no memo. But you know, talk about that story, and like, what did you make of Alvin's comments in that story? And obviously, the big quote is, we don't have a superstar.
The superstar. Yeah, I mean, I think, to me, I understood it, and I thought I explained it, but I can understand how maybe sometimes, I mean, this is the lesson from teaching. You can create the most interesting project ever presented to the kids, and you will have a question that always comes from left field and you were not ready for. His comment was very much about how you set up your cap and looking at, obviously, this team has been a cap team, haven't had success, and coming from Pittsburgh, where they've had obviously a ton of success and have been a cap team. And he essentially was looking at his lineup and saying, well, there are certain players for which you can commit a ton of money to, a huge percent, Sidney Crosby, right? Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews. And at the moment, you look at this lineup and you didn't see that guy. There's sort of a hope that Elias Pettersson could be that guy. And certainly the way he's been playing has been that guy. But, you know, he couched it. He said, listen, everybody, I want to see it from everybody. Like, everybody here is trying to show us what they can do. And you expect no less, right? Like, you're always trying to set a standard. He is the lead guy in hockey operations. You're going to set a standard. And him basically saying that's all it was simply saying, it's not that we're not, you know, that none of these guys couldn't be, but you know, you look at like JT Miller's had a great year, right? And he's had an incredible 2-3 months, right? But it's actually amazing to see how many players have been at least as hot as him, you know, and it's not one or two, it's like a dozen to 15 guys. Like that, like he has been one of the best players in the league, but he has not been anything close to the best player in the league. Right. And so that's sort of a reminder there for context. And then Elias Pettersson obviously has had a terrible season and has come on really hot at the end and is playing the way they need him to play. And that's part of the reason why this playoff push is still flickering along, because between him and Bo Horvat, they're scoring every night. You know, JT Miller, it's not like he's slumped. He's not dominating offensively quite the way he was, which was no shock because he was shooting just like twice his career percentage for a while there. It was crazy. But yeah, I mean, to me, that was all what Alvin was talking about was saying, listen, let's think about the context here and what's in front of us and how I have to think about our contracts. And it was very clear. I mean, to me, the other thing too, there was a red line put down there basically saying, listen, you know, the more any one player gets, the harder it is to do other things, which is an old lesson from here, goes way back when to two guys that work for him now with the Sedins. And that was something that Gillis said, listen, you know, you can make a lot more on the open market. We know that, but we are willing to offer you this. If you trust us, we can then also pay Alex Burrows and Dan Hamhuis and Ryan Kesler and do all these other things. Bring in Manny Malhotra, bring in Ravi Torres, you know, on and on and on. And that was a commitment that they made, and they had to deliver on it. And that's literally what Alvin will be saying too. Say, listen, guys, if you want to stay here, this is what we can pay you. The money we don't spend on you, we will spend on this and this and this. And that to me is the other part of the story. I mean, we were talking about development when he said the player needs to understand what they're doing, but that's an overall philosophy, right? I mean, that's a very modern, you know, for people my age and your age, down to your age, it makes sense because you come through school and like understanding what's going on and being used to being part of the process. People from an older generation weren't used to that. They were just sort of told, here's what you do, blah, blah, blah. And don't, you know, just go on. Nobody knew why, but you know, that is where athletes are. They're wired and they're conditioned, not through sports, but because of like how education influences society, and they want to know what's going on. And so if you speak to them in those terms, that's all he's saying is that, listen, you have to talk to these guys and you have to make it clear what we're doing, why, how we're doing it, and why we're, you know, what the results we expect are going to be.
And the past management regime, they didn't do a very good job of that.
That was not, that's just not how they were. Right. And, you know, there was a lot of, there was just sort of, you know, assumed sort of, well, don't you know? And then, well, if you don't know, I mean, it just was a lot of very siloed thinking and very much, well, this is what we're doing and that's how it is. And a lack of, I mean, you can look at the experience, for instance, the Vertanen and McCann experience in their rookie season, right? They brought these guys in who were incredibly immature, not ready to play. I think my impression is, I mean, the narrative that McCann was the problem is completely backwards from what I understand. And I mean, obviously, well, we can see what's going on with Vertanen. I mean, you know, we'll see how his court case plays out, but you know, that's never a good sign, right? And, you know, McCann has bounced around, but a lot of that's been circumstance, you know, that in the end he's in each stop, the team has had to make a choice, and, you know, Pittsburgh, I think definitely wanted to keep him, but they didn't have a choice going to the expansion draft. Toronto was really interested in him and would have been perfectly, but they had to make a bet. It was going to be him or Kerfoot, you know, and now he's done really well in Seattle. But, you know, both those guys were kind of brought up here and were given no guidance. Like there was nothing for them. And, you know, that's just, you can't, I mean, look at Chris Pronger's tweets, yeah. Right? Chris Pronger makes the point about how much money you throw at these kids and how like astounding that is, you know, and most people aren't equipped to recognize what that does and how that changes your perception of the world. And you can't just throw a 19-year-old kid into the deep end, into a financial deep end like that. You know, you do need to be conscious about that. You know, years ago, I had a friend who, his family worked for Network Records, and, or his dad was involved in Network Records. And there was a story I remember hearing, they had Avril Lavigne signed very young, and they set up a trust for her basically because they're like, you and your family are all of a sudden going to be seeing a lot of money. And for the sake of your young self, we urge you to allow us to put most of your earnings into a long-term trust, you know, which will then become available at some later date. Once, to be perfectly honest, you're more mature. And, you know, like my impression was that was a frustrating process, but that was just basically saying, we've seen what happens to young people when they get too much money right away. Like, it's not good for you. And we're just going to share our experience and we're going to explain this, and this is how they did it. And look at, you know, I mean, Avril's kind of a pop star again, I guess,
yeah,
you know,
totally.
But you know, I'm not saying necessarily she would have gone off the rails, but that was what the thinking was.
Yeah.
And that was not the thinking when Vertanen and McCann first came in. And, you know, there is a process and you have to earn it, and it's a privilege. And, you know, obviously first round picks, I mean, that's the other thing Alvin said. He said, obviously first round picks are better equipped to understand this kind of transition because their whole life they've been sort of playing and they've been, you know, so much in that, there's so much focus now on young elite players, helping them recognize sort of what the work ethic means and how you get to the next level. But getting to the NHL inherently is, once you're there, it's really difficult. It is the pyramid. Everyone's as good as you. And most athletes, when they get to the top of the pyramid, are discovering this for the first time. It's the first time they've really truly run into a whole collection of similarly skilled peers. And And so that is the, you know, that, that is, I think, the other thing here that, you know, he's really focused on, is just sort of thinking about that. It comes back to, like I said, understanding the whole process, having players involved in their own process and understanding what they're doing.
And just before we wrap up here, we're approaching an hour here. This offseason, the goal is to clear cap space, right? Like, they've been very clear about
that. At least
that's
what their intention is. Yeah, we'll see what happens, but yes.
What do you think happens? Like, that's literally my question to you, and it's a very open-ended question.
Yeah.
You can go many directions with it, but, like, are we seeing a big name, like a J.C. Miller or Brock Besser or a Connor Garland getting dealt? Like, what are we seeing this offseason
from the Vancouver Canucks? I mean, I think that the thing seems to be lining up to Besser. There's two alternatives. If they can't sign him to, like, a three-year deal, I don't see... I mean, I suppose they could try to sign him to a long-term deal, but if you're Besser, you know, your negotiating position is terrible. You know that. The team knows that. If you're a guy that's trying to think about how much money you can make in the long term, you know, you're a guy that's going to be like, no, I want to have two good years in the hit free agency, right? So if that's what he wants, he can, you know, they could take him to arbitration and basically try to win, I think it's a 15% salary reduction. And I'm not an expert in these things, but it's pretty clear to me that they're, you know, he's not a $7.5 million hockey player. So, you know, the odds are good that he wins that. So then they win, you know, and then it's up to Besser. It's Besser's camp that can pick the term. And, you know, I haven't talked to Ben Hankinson. I don't know what, but it's hard to see how he wouldn't just accept 2 years, because then he's a UFA and can do what he wants. Then he has a bit more leverage. You know, maybe the Canucks can get a 3-year deal out of this, and say, listen, you were going to, you know, we could have signed you to a 6-year deal. And this is, you know, if you sign a 3-year deal now, well, that's actually going to give you roughly the same amount of money, or a little bit short of the amount of money that perhaps we would have, you know, we'd have had on the table, you know, 3 years ago. And, you know, maybe that's in the big picture something that is tolerable. And, you know, you can get them for 3 years at a, you know, six, you know, you're going to have to, obviously your floor is the arbitration number. So, you know, I think that happens. And, you know, he's been a power play, like he has done the job on the power play. The problem has become he hasn't been able to score on 5-on-5. Why that is not clear to me. And perhaps the Canucks have an answer and they think they can fix that. I mean, I have a hard time seeing them being able to trade him unless they're able to put him on this contract and someone says, yeah, we love that contract and we want to bring him in. That part is going to be challenging. Miller in the end is a financial question, and it comes back to that red line that I think is clearly there. And, you know, people I've talked to are basically like, yeah, I think there's a number that they could go for, but it comes back to Miller also sort of thinking about his role in the team, what he wants to be. Does he, you know, because if he stays, he'll be the guy, right? Like, he could be the guy. If he goes somewhere else, he's probably not going to be the guy, but he might get paid more. And so that becomes the equation there. You know, I was saying to someone last night, like, you 16 goals in 21 games for Horvat, like, he's been on a tear. And, you know, I was one of these people who said, maybe it's time to think about, maybe the Canucks, you know, in the end, you have to make changes. If you don't make the playoffs, I mean, even you sneak in, but inherently, if you don't make the playoffs, like, you can't just keep carrying on thinking, well, maybe it'll be different next year. And so part of me was like, well, yeah, that's a case also for moving Horvat. Like, one of those guys is going to have to go. And at least at the deadline now, you know, sort of in hindsight, I wonder if there's a team going, man, I wish we'd pushed harder for Horvat. Look at how he's playing. Cause look at how he's playing. And he would add so much to any team right now. I don't get the impression that he's a guy that they really would move, because I think they do. There is, you know, we can see the character that's there and the performance there, and the list goes on. So that to me is a, you know, I don't think that's one that happening. I do think they'll try to see if they can find a way to move Myers, if they can find a way to move Pearson in the offseason, just because of the way their no trade clauses move. I mean, I know they were trying to move Pearson, or at least they would like to. You know, obviously Pearson had full control of the situation. I don't know if they ever actually even approached him with a trade, but certainly it was something they were thinking about. And I think you're right. They want to find some cap space. I mean, you look at certain other things, I find myself wondering, you know, they have to deal with the Halak cap penalty. They're still got the two buyouts on the books. You know, you never like to pile up dead money, but I find myself wondering if they buy up Michael Ferland, because, you know, that's actually not, you know, you can definitely reduce his cap hit. You're obviously going to spread it out over a couple seasons, but it's not a terrible buyout situation. I think that I just look at it and I think is going to happen. It really, I think, more than anything comes down to what happens with Miller. And if they can't get a reasonable number with Miller, because again, remember, they've got his cap hit for next year. Like that's locked in. You know, this negotiation is for the season after, when things actually are a lot better, you know? So that, to me, that's the other thing in all this, is that, you know, they're not thinking about next year's cap. There's, you know, with Miller, they know what Miller's going to be. That is the nice thing, is that at least they can see what his cap number is and they know likely what the performance is going to be. It's interesting. I'm certain. I mean, you said they want to create some cap space, but like I said, I'm not sure it's necessarily one of the obvious ones, but I do think it's likely it's one of those other ones I mentioned at the very least.
Okay. Anything else to add before we close out? I always ask Chris, do you have a prospects report, Patrick?
No, I don't.
Well, neither do I. Usually I can just piggyback off Faber's, but he's not here today. I think we'll close it out there. Obviously, like we said, Faber, I know you're listening to this. Thoughts are with you, buddy. We love you. Thank you to everybody who tuned in. Patrick, thank you for joining me on this episode. It's nice to have a co-host. Faber doesn't think I could do it alone.
Thanks to Nono Francesco.
Yeah, thanks to Nono Francesco, of course.
That's your actual Nono, not the owner Francesco.
No.
just to be clear.
Yes, that's my actual Nono. And again, our thanks to Kevin Woodley of In Goal Mag for joining us. I'm actually going to drag on for a bit, like 20 more seconds, because Faber doesn't like when we go under an hour, and we're at 59 minutes and 30 seconds. So how was your day today?
It rounds up.
No, it doesn't. And we also have an outro. Have you heard our outro before? Do you ever listen to our show? Be honest.
I do.
When's the last episode?
I don't listen to the end, though, so I don't know about these complaints.
Our outro.
Because an hour is too long.
Well, no, unless you're doing it right on the dot.
Unless you're doing a movie podcast about, like,
Korean. Yeah, that's true.
An hour? You know, it's fine.
Yeah, we try to get to an hour. You know what? Actually, I shouldn't tell you this on air. We'll cut to the outro. I'll tell you this off air.
What you guys really need is another ad read, and then it's no problem.
You're right.
Got to sell one more ad.
Yeah. I forgot to even say, if you want to advertise with us, shoot me a message or a favor. You advertise with us at Canucks Combo on Twitter. All right. Again,
don't you have an email? What if they want to approach you privately?
We don't do emails.
Jeez.
We're not old.
No.
My thanks to Patrick Johnson and, of course, Kevin Woodley for joining us on this episode. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of The Canucks Conversation.
Thanks for listening to Canucks Conversation, delivered by DoorDash. Hit the subscribe button to never miss an episode.
How about keep it to a thank you, Jim?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The playoffs are near and we have an army. Nation Gear is ready to gear you up for Vancouver's playoff run. Rep your favorite team as they battle for the cup. Shop the exclusive We Have an Army playoff tee and more at nationgear.ca.